Attention WFIA members, the virtual 2024 WFI convention will be this fall from September 13th through September 15th, 2024. Scheduled to appear are the world's strongest man, Ken Patera, the world's most dangerous announcer, Gary Michael Capetta, Bill Apter, and just recently signed, the High Flyers, Jumpin' Jim Brunzell and Greg Gagne. And folks, there's more coming on board. So run, don't walk to your keyboard. Get on that computer. Check the WFIA.org website and our Facebook page to see when these guys are going to be scheduled and their prices. Folks, if you are not a WFIA member, you will be paying an additional fee. So go to the WFIA.org today and register, become a member, and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to Pro Wrestling Wire Radio here, part of ProWrestlingWire.com. I've got a very special guest here today in Cougar J. How's it going, sir?
I'm doing well, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And I'm sure that a lot of my fans will probably be very interested in hearing this interview here because, you know, as people know that I'm a huge old school fan, and my favorite years are 1987 to 1989. So that's probably, I'm guessing, probably the height of your career, right? That's around the time you started.
That was an incredible era. Really, from like 1986 to like 1992 or 93, it was just a great time to be there. Incredible angles, you know. Dusty was booking everything, and he was a booker, and he come up with a lot of incredible angles. They did a lot of good stuff in that era. I don't think it'd ever be tops when Nature Boy Ric Flair was at the top, and Sting, the old Sting with the blonde hair, not the Crow. You know, yes. The blonde hair and the makeup, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express. It was just a time to be in that business. It was just a great time, you know, an era. I mean, you're going tens of thousands of people, you know, screaming. It was just an incredible high at that time, you know, and I being young, you know, just breaking into business, you know, I had a good run with it, had a good time.
You just mentioned something that made me compare wrestling between now and then. You're talking about like the crowds being very hot all the time. Now so much you don't see that if you watch wrestling today. You know, it's a lot of times it's like a dead crowd watching wrestling.
You know, they had it going on. Between the, you know, the referee and the mic in his ear, they would let us know when the crowd was getting dull to bring a high spot. Now, they'll do 30 high spots, 20 backdrops, you know, 20 suplexes, you know. And back when I was in it, you know, a clothesline by Nikita Koloff, that was a finished move. Gourdbuster, Arn Anderson, that was a finished move. Now all the finished moves, they do them, like I said, 20 or 30 times. It's not what it used to be. You know, nowadays they just go crazy, more acrobatic. You know, that's why I don't really pay much attention to it. There's really no hot stories behind it. I mean, Cody Rhodes is trying with WWF. You know, he's up there. He's getting a lot of attention. I'm reading about him every day. You know, Dusty, Cody, you know, Dusty's son is doing rather well in the business. I'm happy for him. You know, he's getting his go-round, his ride on the merry-go-round. Yeah. You know, I was more of a mid-card. Never made it to the top. 1% of the millions of wrestlers out there, 1% will make it, you know, to that level. NWA, WCW, WWF. When you get in it, it's the politics behind the craft. You know, I conquered the craft, the wrestling, but the politics. That's what kind of slowed me down. I wouldn't do things that they want. I wouldn't slice my forehead open. I wouldn't stick a syringe in my arm and pull out a bottle of blood so I can do the blood from the mouth gimmick, you know, just certain things. I just didn't feel right doing. And I was just the type, I wouldn't do it. And I was told I'll never make it. You're never going to make it in this business. I'm not dedicated enough. And I agreed. I'd use a different, if you give me a clean syringe, I'll give you a vial of blood. But I'm not going to keep using the one that everybody else is using. You know, I just refused to do some things. And it'd come back, you know, to get me in the end. I couldn't go anywhere with a phone call being dropped. And next thing you know, I'm being let loose. I'm let go. So the craft I conquered, the politics behind it I could not conquer. Like I said, had a good run. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
One of the things is I want to dive into your wrestling career a little bit, and then we're going to talk to about what you're up to today as well. So we'll go into that. But you grew up in Mooresville, North Carolina. Is this correct?
Mooresville, North Carolina. Little as I know, that's where the wrestling school was. But I'd already moved away. I kind of got out. I pursued entertainment in 1978. I didn't find wrestling until 86, 87, and just stumbled on it. And old Gene Anderson from the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, we was playing a nightclub in Charlotte, North Carolina, the Palomino Room. And Paul Scoggins, the owner, took us in a limousine to the Charlotte Coliseum. We pulled up underneath. And there must have been 10,000 people there. And Arn Anderson hit on my wife. If he had not hit on my wife, I probably would not have even gone into the business. But he actually stopped, walking around, standing right beside my wife and hit on her. I'm trying to climb the rail for it. You know, and the security was all over me there, escorting me out. And old Gene Anderson, well, he got that twitch. He goes, hey, kid, you want to be a wrestler? I said, if I can get to Arn Anderson, I'll do anything I have to do. And he handed me his business card, called security off of me, and we hopped in a limo. In about 2 weeks, I give him a call, and he told me to come to Mooresville. I said, Mooresville? I mean, I was born and raised there. My gosh. And Nelson Royal, that Nelson Royal Diamond All Western store, they had a ring set up in the metal building. We had to go through like a three-hour tryout in the middle of July, 100 degrees. There must have been 60 guys there. I mean, 6 foot. I'm only 6 foot tall. These guys were 6 foot six, 6 foot eight, colossal mountain of men. And out of the 60, I was one of the last six that was standing. And Rick, they couldn't beat me down for 9 months, 5 nights a week. 4 hours a night, hip toss, backdrop, hip toss, arm drag, body slam, throwing out the ring, throwing it, run the ropes, do your bumps. And beat every living hell out of me. It took one point, my wife actually had to bring a pickup truck from Charlotte. We were living in Charlotte at the time, to Mooresville, so the guys could lay me in the back of the pickup truck because my legs wouldn't work. I couldn't get my leg. They beat me so bad, my legs weren't working, and I couldn't stand up, and they actually towed me out to the pickup truck, put me in the bed, and I rode home laying in the back of a pickup truck. But I come back, and after 9 months, Gene Anderson said, you don't give up, do you, kid? I said, no, I want to be a wrestler. And I was involved with a traveling road show at the time, kind of like old Chippendales. And they would call me Go-Go Boy and Stripper Boy. Gene Anderson, I should have never told him I danced in ballet. I did 4 or 5 years of ballet.
Wow.
And Go-Go Boy, Stripper Boy, calling me every name under the book, beat me to death, Gene slapping me around. But after 9 months, he just said, you don't give up, do you, kid? I said, no, sir. I'm going to be a wrestler at that point. He goes, you need to learn to work. I said, what in the heck have I been doing for the past 9 months? Because you've been learning to take care of yourself. You got to learn to work. And that's when they started taking me through the ropes, showing me what wrestling was all about. And I thought the stuff was real. I mean, I done been beat up for 4 hours out there during this tryout. They took us up to the ring. I never, you know, actually been inside a wrestling ring at that time. And I got up there and I went, woo! I should not have done that. I should not have done that because he put the warlord, who was just breaking in at that time, and he was a big old man, and I thought this stuff was real. I'm trying to shoot on him, you know, and he's getting ready to hook up with me. I said, wait a minute. I said, I want you to know it's going to be a pleasure to have my ass whooped by you. And when he went to shake my hand, I made my move. I went to try to lift him off his feet. And like I hit an oak tree. The man didn't budge. I'm like, oh, my gosh. What have I done? I started looking up. I got up his nostrils that I made him so mad. He just scooped me up. He goes, are you ready? So I'm ready. He just threw me up as high as he could and stepped out of the way. When I hit that ring, it just, Rick, I couldn't get up. I'm like, oh, my God. And he started stomping me until I rolled out the ring. Gene over, you want to be a wrestler? You want to be a wrestler? This was about, I said, I'm going to be a wrestler. I'm going to be a wrestler. As I was crawling around the ring to get away from the warlord, because he was going to take it to me. I was crawling under the ring. They was grabbing me, pulling me back out. I just trying to get the hell out of there. I don't believe I was stupid enough to make a move like that. I barely weighed 180 pounds at that time. This man, 300 pounds, 6'8", 6'9". I didn't budge him. I didn't budge him at all. And he took it to me. I learned not to ever do that again. Do what they say. Do what they say.
Was there anybody else in that class that out of the 9 people?
There were 6 of us that made it.
Okay.
And I was like the second class out. The Tommy Angel, David Isley, Colt Steele was like the first class. Come in with the second class. That was Chance McQuaid, Dexter Westcott, Cougar J, Ricky Nelson. You know, we were the second class out. And Tommy Angel and David Isley, they were training us because they were the very first class.
Right.
You know, come out in 86. I come late latter part of 86 into 87. And by 1987, I was turned loose.
I interviewed Tommy last year, and I got to tell you, what a guy he is. What a great guy Tommy is.
Tommy is a great guy. I talk to him on a regular basis. I'm glad we kind of reconnected last year up at Fort Mill, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Nikita Koloff was doing the Man Up Conference. I'm not saw Nikita, gosh, since like 1992. It might have been in 1990. His wife had died a few years before. Right. And then I kind of left WCW, went and tried to do some stuff at WWF, and then went into some minor APW, ECW. Just couldn't get the right gimmick. But Tommy, we reconnected up in Fort Mill at the old PTL, where Nikita puts on the Man Up Conference.
Right.
Makes you a better man. I'm glad, you know, I got to reconnect with Nikita. But we do talk regular now. Talk regular, Tommy Angel and I, Nikita and I, we talk more now than we did back in the late 80s. It's kind of strange. We've all become old men now.
I actually watched a match with you two, you and Nikita, last night. So
that was did you?
It wasn't a very long match. So,
yeah, well, like I said, Nikita, he's 65 now, so we can't do that stuff like when we were in our late 20s, in our early 30s.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I'd love to give it a shot one more time. I got over to cancer. I got cleared of cancer in December, and now I'm just doing the immunotherapy. I fought that stuff for 3 years, and they told me I was going to die. But now I'm putting the weight back on, working out. Got a little.
There you go.
I feel like getting back, getting my weight back on. I went from 207 to 127. Cancer eat 80 pounds off of me. But now I'm back up to my 160s. And, you know, I'd love to be able to step back in it one more time. Take my grandkids and let them see their pawpaw in the ring. You know, they see old footage. They see the old matches. They have never saw anything live. I'd love to be able to do that before I check out. You know, but I don't know if that'll ever happen. You know, I don't hear from, you know, the wrestling industry that much anymore. since Nikita put me on his podcast, people are like you did, you know, they're contacting me, you know, because everybody, I reckon, thought I was dead. You know, a lot of them, you know, Animal and Hog and Kurt Hennig and all them guys, you know, that era, yeah. You guys are dead now, you know, but I'm still alive.
There you go. Yeah, you are. And obviously, you just mentioned, we can go into it now, like, but you were diagnosed with cancer, like you said, a couple of years back. So,
it was December 28th of 2020 when they told me you had 3 months to live. You got 7 tumors. I had 2 on each side of my neck, 2 in my lungs, 3 in my intestines. And it was way beyond. They said you got 1% chance of surviving. There's no way. I mean, they didn't even want to treat me at first. And that's why I switched doctors. You know, I said, I feel like Jesus saved and healed me for a reason. And it was a battle. It was hard, Rick. It was tough. And it put a lot of stress on the family, put a lot of stress on me. But I said, I'm not going to check out. I'm going to fight this. Hospice was in my house in February of 2021. I said, forget these treatments. We can make you comfortable. I said, yeah, you can drug me up. So I take my last breath. I said, I feel like, you know, God has me here for a reason. And she heads up the cancer support group. Her name, Nikki. And I go to her support groups. I said, you were going to kill me back in 2021. She said, we didn't think you was going to survive. They still talk about you here at Flagler Hospital because you didn't have really no chance of surviving. And that's why we was trying to make you comfortable. She said, I never dreamed. I said, you told me nothing supernatural is going to heal me. That's why I asked you to leave and not come back. If I'm going out, I'm going to go out like a man. I'm going to go out fighting to the now. And that's part of what saved me, Rick. You know, switching doctors, getting somebody more on a positive note, and a more spiritual doctor. I found a good oncologist. And he told me, I'm going to do some radical chemo on you. I'm going to do some. And I'd be there 5 or 6 hours a day, get my chemotherapy. And it was tough. But now it's just immunotherapy. I was clear December 27th. Exactly 3 years on the mark of 2023 being cancer free, you know. And Nikita, when I went up there in June, I had a colostomy bag on because they took out like 13 inches of my intestines with 3 tumors. And Nikita laid his hands and prayed that the bag would come off. And I told that was impossible. It was not enough to hook up. But Rick, for some odd reason, a peristomal hernia developed in my underneath my bag, and they had to do a surgery to remove the hernia, but they told me the bag would probably be on the other side when you come out of anesthesia. But I come 3/4 of an inch had enough to connect me back up. So October the 4th, I become bag free, cancer free, chemotherapy free. I'm still doing immunotherapy. And next week, the 31st of this month, one of the most important scans in the past 3.5 years, because we've been doing immunotherapy, you know, for the past 5 months. No chemo, no other cancer meds, just immunotherapy. It's called Keytruda. And they think that's what's keeping it away. And they said, now's the time. If it's going to come back, it's going to come back now. And I'll find out June 6th. If the cancer is back or if it's gone and they're going to back it up, if it's still clear, by the end of the year, they may just, you know, turn me loose, let me ring the bell. They'll scan me regularly, but it's going to hit that 4-year mark come December. So it's been a long battle. Been a long battle, but I kind of had people thought I was crazy. You've been dropped on your head one too many times, DM. I try to tell people I had a little head start because I grew up in a non-religious family. You know, there's no God. We had no Bible in the house. We never went to church. So I didn't come up that way. And March 28th of 2020, I was on top of the world. Had my gift shop, had a ghost tour company. I tell ghost stories here in St. Augustine, and had number one company. I was banking all kind of money, had everything, but I had my demons. You know, a lot of wrestlers go through it. Mask the pain. You can't, you know, I got kind of went wild on the medication, and I was told I had money. I had a wife of 40 years, 3 kids, 6 grandchildren, cars, trucks, a nice house on the lake, had everything going on. And I wasn't right up here. And I was told, laying in my bed, March 28, 2020, if you continue your ways, you will die. But if you change your ways, I'll give you 20 more years of life. I go, who is this? My wife goes, who are you talking to? I said, I don't know. So you might want to see a psychiatrist. But it took a while to realize that I was given an ultimatum. I did come out of that vision, that experience with God. I did. I started working out, started eating right, got off all the drugs, got off all the alcohol, got off everything. And I went up to 207 pounds. If I had not gained that 30 pounds, the time cancer hit 8 months later, I would have been under 100 pounds. I would have died. But I'm beyond that now. And now people say, oh, God, Jesus did save and heal you. I go, yeah, I've been trying to tell everybody this for 4 years now. And now everybody's just starting to understand, you know, Dion's changed. He's not the heathen. Because I had my temper, my rage, and I've knocked a couple people out in my days. I'd be on the streets of St. Augustine. Three guys grabbed my top hat off my head, took off running. I go, I'll run them down. I'll run them down, Rick. I was like 48 years old at that time. These three 18-year-old kids took it to them. Took hyperextended in the throat, chopped, put the other one in the sleeper, cranked it down. They took the warrant out on me. They took the warrant. And I told the judge, I was in front of Judge Tinlin. I go, there's only three of them. He goes, Mr. Moore, I understand that you've been trained in martial arts. You've been trained in boxing. You are a professional wrestler. You know how to inflict injury upon people. I said, yes, sir. He goes, they did alienate you. But if you ever come back to my court again, I will prosecute you to the hill. I said, you'll never see me again. You'll never see me again. And, so he goes, you dial 911. I just didn't have time to dial 911. A guy was running away with a $200 top hat. I wasn't going to let that go. So I chased him down and took it to him. I might be 64 years old now, but like old Nikita, we're tough old hombres, man. We're tough. We can still take it to your hind end if your bag is into a corner. We try to avoid all confrontation. You know, I don't want to do this. Don't force me, please. So I carry a staff with me. I ace that bow staff when I was in martial arts. I get been in many ballroom brawls at Q-Stick. Save your hind end. You know, take it two or three guys at a time that Q-Stick. But we're just old tough old birds, you know, and thank God I'm still alive. I lived through it. Lucky. Very lucky man.
Yeah.
Got the experience at all, Rick. I'm one of these guys that never going to say shoulda, coulda, Clint Eastwooda. I done everything, every dream that I could ever dream, I did. I'm not going to turn back and say, what if? You know, I did. I might die old, broke, cancer patient, but hey, I had a good go round, brother. I had a good go round. Thanks for the Lord above. They let me stay a little bit longer. One more time. Any promoters out there? Oh, Cougar J. Cougar J is still here.
Where can we get
one shirt today?
Where can we get one of those shirts?
Well, through my ministry. About 2 years ago, I formed a little ministry, you know, since I was saved July of 2020. JesusWorldMinistry.com. If you make a donation of $50, you get a Cougar J shirt or a Cougar J card. I still have a bunch of my cards I bought back in 1988. I'll sign it or just send $100, donate $100. I'll send you a Cougar J t-shirt and an autographed Cooter J card. You can't find these things. Trying to build my little ministry up. It's 2 years old now. We've come a long way. You know, in the 2 years that I've been in the ministry, I've become ordained in November 30th of 2021 during the cancer. Pastor James worked with me. I went to a lot of churches. I don't know, Rick, and I kind of like wrestling is a bit. Churches are business. They're businesses, and I just didn't agree with some of the things they were saying. I tell them, they got to a point, don't ask Dion anything. That man tells you the truth. You know, your sermon sucked. He'll tell you your sermon sucked. If the music was horrible, he'll tell you. Say, you know, I don't know. I reckon they was afraid like wrestling. You're going to take their spot. So I form my own little ministry and see what happens with it. It's only 2 years old and I contributed to that, me being alive today. You know, I mean, got through some tough times. You know, you're not, with Vladimir Petrov, the big Russian that took Nikita's place, but I haven't. They just brought that man off the street. Yep. They brought this man in off the street. Put him in the ring a couple of times. The man did, he knocked me out twice with that Russian sickle. I got two slow-mos of him driving me. I mean, a complete flip, driving my head in the ring, knocked me. And you could tell I couldn't get up. I didn't know where I was. You know, and Sid Vicious is another one. These guys, they didn't know how to work. That's why I don't think they really lasted that long, because they just did not. Well, I hooked up with Steen. And did a couple of things. He looked at me and goes, man, you're light. You know how to work, don't you? I said, yes, sir. And so, you know, Sting would give me a lot when I worked him because he trusted me. Ric Flair, I did that first match, you know, trusted me. After these top guys worked with me that first time, that second and third time, I'd get a little bit more to do a little bit more. I'd get a little spot here, a little spot there. And they took care of me after I did my job for him that one or two times, and they saw that the man knows how to work. He's not going to hurt anybody. You know, you don't get in the ring. I don't care who you are. With Ric Flair, Nature Boy, Sting, Michael P.S. Hayes, any of them, you don't get in the ring unless somebody trusts you somewhere in the organization. Somebody somewhere had a little faith in you, a little trust. And that's kind of what got me through. I knew how to work. But like I said, Gene Anderson and Nelson Royal, they were incredible teachers. Then I got lucked up and got Wahoo McDaniel to work with me some. Then I got old Sweet Hansen, him and Rip Hawk from the old Hollywood Blondes from the 60s, 50s and 60s, worked with me, you know, as time. So I had four, you know, incredible teachers with Nelson, Gene, Wahoo and Sweet Hansen. You know, they really taught me well.
You want to talk a little bit about training under Wahoo McDaniel?
Oh, Wahoo, I never forget. Wahoo was just straightforward. He's from the old school. Like him and Sweet and Gene Nelson, they know how to put it in. I remember I had a headache. I landed wrong. I'm sitting against the ring, and Wahoo said, what's wrong? I said, I got a headache. I landed wrong. At that point, Sweet Hansen stomped my foot, my left foot. I'm like, damn, Sweet, why'd you stomp my foot for? He goes, how's that headache? I said, I don't feel the headache, but my foot hurts. Then Wahoo just, wham, vicious chop across my chest. I said, damn, Wahoo, what'd you do that for? How's your foot feel? Well, my foot feels fine, but now my chest hurt. I backed up. I said, no more. But Wahoo, he was a good dude. He was a good dude, as long as you did what he said.
Right.
If you go against him, them guys would eat you up if they really, really wanted to. And Wahoo had that grip. You know, when you shake that man's hand and you know this guy's a mechanic or he's done something with his hand, because you can't get out of it. You know, Wahoo had a grip from hell. And if he latch into you, you get away from what he's telling you what to do. He tells you, you know, the top guy who you more experienced guy guides the match. He guides it. So Wahoo's telling you what to do. As long as you did what he said, you're going to be okay. You're going to get a few little moves. You're going to look all right. But if you try to shoot on him, try to go in for something you're not supposed to, Wahoo would eat you alive. You know, so I learned the hard way. Don't cross Gene Anderson. Don't cross Nelson Royal. Do not cross Wahoo McDaniel. And do not cross Sweet Hansen, because he hadn't been in the ring in like 30 years and he gave me that first punt. I mean, I thought my teeth. He goes, "Oh, brother, I'm sorry. I come in. I didn't mean to hit you like that. You okay?" I said, "Do I still have teeth in my head?" I said, "Sweet, you hit like a Mack truck." You know, them old guys. Well, you understand, Rick, you know, in the 50s and 60s, these guys had to beat the hell out of one another to get the sport over. They had to do a killer Kowalski. He bit that guy's ear off. You know, these guys literally beat the hell out of one another to get the craft over back then. That's what paved the way for the mid-80s when that shift started coming. That new breed of wrestler was coming in. You know, your Brad Armstrongs and your Tim Horners and your great Mudas. This new era, the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express, this new era was coming. And when they had to learn to perfect the craft, you know, so we could last longer than 6 or 7 years. Most of them old timers, if you made it 10 years, you're lucky.
Right.
But learn how to perfect the craft. And of course, Vince McMahon exposed the business in the 80s. This is entertainment to get away from the athletic commissions, you know, paying those fees and physicals. And it got away from it, exposed it. But that's basically when everything started to shift. When we started doing stuff, it was always, you always knew who was going to win. I don't care about in the 50s and 60s, you know, you walk in there and you see your name on a chalkboard. Whoever underlines going over the finished move. When Nikita, you know, the sickle, Russian sickle, was the finished move. So a lot of people say, y'all discuss these matches. Not really. We discuss it in the ring. We talk to one another. One word combination, tackle, drop down, hip toss. Three different moves, one word. And we talk to each other as you're going into the ring rope. The referee, the crowd's getting dull. They say they need to bring a high spot in. So we do a few high spots and bring it back down to the mat again. Work that one body part. Gene Anderson, work. If you stick, you start with the arm, stay with the arm. Start with the leg, stay with the leg. Don't, like today, they work. They'll do something to the head, do something to the arm, do something to the leg. Work five body parts. We would train one body part. Stay on that one body part. It's not like that anymore.
No. It's a lot of high spots and flipping around and weapons and all sorts of weird stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's more acrobatic now. It's more of a show. And it's just the new era being ushered in. The Roman Reigns and, you know, Cody Rhodes, this new era is coming in. We don't understand it like back in the 80s, Wahoo and Swede didn't understand this new wave coming in, just like we don't understand the new wave coming out. It's just the times, you know, that's what the people want. I believe that's what they want, Rick. They want to see that stuff. Right. They want to see people, you know, get hurt. They like seeing us get hurt. They love it.
You brought up a name that I really want to ask you about. You had the chance to work with Brad Armstrong on a couple of occasions.
Yes, him and Tim Horner, the Lightning Express.
Yep.
And Brad was a very good worker. You know, everything he's done was like Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner, the Lightning Express, were they're real good. They never hurt you. They give you a few things. And try not to humiliate you and, you know, make you look good, even though you're putting them over. You know, want to make you look good, so give them some kind of, instead of just squashing you to death, like there's no chance in the world, you know, to give you a little something, make you look, you know, better. And as time progressed, I'd get a few more moves, get to do it. And I got to do drop kicks. I was so happy. I got to do them. When old Johnny Ace, Animal's brother, who works WWE, and Shane Douglas, they were doing the dynamic dudes. Right. I cannot believe Dusty went back and they told him, give Cougar, give him some spots, make him look good. So that particular match, I just could not believe I got all everything they was telling me to do, and they just kept bringing it on. Give me a slam, give me an arm drag, you know, give me a drop kick. You know, of course, we made them look good. We had Brad Armstrong, and now his dad, Bullet Bob. Now he's the one that could be stiff on you, but he comes from the Dory Funks and the Sweet Hand, Bullet Bob Armstrong from the old school. You know, they can hurt you. Right. If they really wanted to. Like Andre the Giant, that man could crush anybody he wanted to. Anybody. But yeah, he had to put Hogan over, and he had to put Ultimate Warrior over, and here's Andre, never lost a match, and had to pass the torch. You know, he had to pass it to Hulk Hogan back in the 80s. That was a time I couldn't believe it, because even Hulk Hogan, Terry would tell you, you know, he was afraid. He didn't know what Andre was going to do. Yeah. Them old timers can snap at any time. You don't want to be on the receiving end when they snap. I was wrestling the Fabulous Freebirds, and Terry Gordy, Michael P.S. Haynes, I did everything they were saying. But when Lee Scott got in there, he started trying to take over, and they beat the crap out of that poor kid. And when they threw him out the ring, you could see in the match, I literally tapped Terry Gordy on the back. I'm here. I'm right behind you. So you turn around. That's when P.S. come over and started to go, stay down, kid. Stay down. And I knew that something, and they was beating the hell out of Lee Scott for not doing what he was told to do, even in the dressing room, lacing him out. Don't you ever shoot on me the way you did in that ring. I'm going, oh my God, I witnessed this. They beat the hell out of Lee Scott because he tried to shoot on him, you know, take control of the match. You don't do that.
Right.
You do what you're told to do. We're paid to do a job. That's our job. Do what the top man says. I think that's why I survived as long as I did. It didn't matter what they told me to do. I wrestled Terry Funk. And he goes, can you go out in the ring? I said, I'll fly. He just does the motion. I'm the one, you know, running out, going between the second and third rope, getting as high as I can. He's just following me. Got the back of my head and got me by the trunks, just following me around. And I flew. And he come out there and goes, that was incredible, kid, incredible. Can you do it again? Sure. He threw me back in the ring and threw me out the other side. Oh, it drew so much heat. But he was like hugging me. Man, you made me look so good. You made me look so good. I said, that's my job, Mr. Funk. You would call me Terry. My name's Terry. I said, all right, Terry Funk. You know, so had a chance to work some legends. You know, legends that, how old are you?
I'm 49 years old.
Oh, see, you in that era, you were young in them late 80s. You know, yeah, you were watching us get beat up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
That's my favorite era. That's, you know, I still go back, you know, at night. A lot of times I come home from work, I'll throw on old NWA, AWA, all that stuff. You know what I mean? Sit there and watch it at nighttime because there's nothing else on TV, right? Really.
It just hyped you up. It gets you. You got a Turner Studio in Atlanta. Your TV taping. My God. It drives people crazy. The stuff we did, and people were going nuts. They were eating it up. No matter, Dusty would lay out a storyline. I tell you what, you're like, that's never going to work. Once it gets out there and it starts it, you're like, damn, this shit is hitting it. Dusty, it hit. He's bringing people to where they just, you know, about ready to pass out. You know, right. They just to the extreme, playing people's emotions. And there's no one like old Ricky Morton from Rock and Roll Express. That dude could play the emotions on people and looking at people to crack, help me. And they're eating it up. It's help Ricky Morton. My God, he's getting the hell beat out of him. You know, Robert always do the same. But Ricky, there was no one. That boy could sail. That man knew how to work a crowd, just like Flair. And the science, there's no one ever going to top Ric Flair. I don't care who you are. I mean, the science with him and Ricky Steamboat in New Orleans, Louisiana. An hour and 15 minutes, them two guys went, and they just had the crowd here the entire time. I saw Ron Garvin, him and Ric Flair. I mean, they chopped each other so many times, flesh would be dangling. They chopped so hard for a whole hour, pop, pop, that they would just come back bleeding from the chest, from opening up skin from them chop. I took three from Ric Flair. I'm like, damn. I had to get down like, man.
Attention WFIA members. The virtual 2024 WFI convention will be this fall from September 13th through September 15th, 2024. Scheduled to appear are the world's strongest man, Ken Patera. The world's most dangerous announcer, Gary Michael Capetta. Bill Apter, and just recently signed the High Flyers, Jumpin' Jim Brunzell and Greg Gagne, and folks, there's more coming on board. So run, don't walk to your keyboard, get on that computer, check the WFIA.org website and our Facebook page to see when these guys are going to be scheduled and their prices. Folks, if you are not a WFIA member, you will be paying an additional fee, so go to the WFIA.org today and register. Become a member and enjoy the podcast.
Nope, that's all right. My very first match in NWA was with Nikita Koloff.
Mm-hmm.
I know they were ragging me, but I'm a nervous wreck. Nikita wasn't talking to me, so I knew this man. They said, duck away. You're going to have your teeth in his forearm from that Russian sickle. Had me so nervous. And when we got to that point, we hooked up, he was getting me in a headlock. So I'm like, wow. So I got him in the headlock. We'd done a few other things, and he went up slamming to get set up. I'm like, oh, God, here it comes. Here it comes. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Here it comes. I tell you, Rick, I'm like, wow, that was really nice. And you lay there and let him do the three count. I didn't hardly feel it. But with Vladimir Petrov, he laid it in. The boy didn't know no better. Mm-hmm. And they was telling me about Ric Flair. You duck away from the man's chops, he going to eat you up. Put that chest out there. And I did. I did, Ricky, back me in that corner. He goes, here comes the chop, kid. I put that chest out there. Wham! Oh, my God. My breath jumped out. Went, damn, that was a chop. And he set me up again. Here it goes. Here it comes again, kid. I'm kind of like, I put it out there. Wham! Like, oh. On the third one, I'm kind of like, and after that, I had to drop. I had to get out. I couldn't take more. I was like, man, them chops light you up. Makes your breath jump out and go, that was a chop. That was a chop. From hell. But it was great. The people loved it. I mean, people loved those chops. They like seeing us get hurt.
Yeah.
And wrestling, it does hurt. People know, they say it's fake. You're trained to fall. But yeah, it hurts. Every single time you take that bump, it hurts. There's a spring in the ring. No, there's not. There's a 2x12s and a piece of plywood and a little bit of foam. What gives is the actual wood. No, stiff rings, it hurt every single time. Every single time.
And when people call it fake, that's something that I just don't care for. I always invite them down to my friend's school. I said, you think it's fake? I'll bring you down and, say, we'll show you how fake it is.
We know who's going to win. You know what the finish move is going to be. What happens in between? It's all improv, buddy. You're just rolling with it. The crowd's actually controlling what you do in there. They stay yelling and screaming. That's all you want.
Yeah.
That crowd to participate, take part in it. And there's some wrestlers that played that emotional card, man. They knew. They knew how to grab you inside and make you believe it. You know, Dusty actually beat Lex Luger, the Four Horsemen, Ric Flair, Arn, Ole and Arn. They think that Dusty really gonna beat, but they play it off. The four of them, he'd come up with that elbow and Dusty cleared the ring. You know, Dusty knew how to, he all about Dusty, and that shoot on YouTube, Ron Garvin shoots on Dusty Rhodes. You know, what Ron Garvin says is true. Everything he says about Dusty was on an ego trip, but you got to hand it to him. The man knew how to work. He knew the business. He knew what would go and would not go. You know, Dusty knew. He knew that business like no other. He's another one from the 70s, too. You know, late 60s, early 70s.
Right.
I grew up watching Sweet Hansen and Rip Hall. Then in the 70s, I kind of idolized Ric Flair. And that was my heroes, with Rip Hulk and Ric Flair when I was growing up. So it was an honor to be in the ring with Ric Flair.
Do you mind talking about you made a couple WWF appearances in the, I think, 1989?
Yeah, I got to work Ted DiBiase, Million Dollar Man, when Virgil was escorting him to the ring. Fabulous Rougeau Brothers, Shawn Michaels and Monty Jannetty, the Rockers. They were doing the takeoff of the Rock and Roll Express.
Right.
I never got to work Andre, but I got to play cards with him. He loved playing cards. You know, I reckon that's the way he relaxed. You know, everybody has their what you do to get motivated before you go in the ring, and Andre was just playing the cards, but he was a good dude.
Right.
And I'd be on many plane flights, and that guy could eat 3 dozen Krispy Kreme donut at a sitting, you know, 3 or 4 dozen of egg. Man could drink a gallon of booze and not faze him. I take 2 or 3 drinks. I'm under the table. But Andre, he could party. Kurt Hennig had a good run with him. I like Kurt Hennig. He was a good dude. He gave me some good stuff when I was up at WWF for that brief amount of time. And in 1999, R-Truth, who was going to name K-Crush, right, we had formed a tag team called Rock and Rap 2000 in 1998. And in 1999, he got the call. You know, Vince wanted K-Crush. They changed it to K-Quick, and it became R-Truth. But at least one of us, you know, made it. R-Truth finally won his first WrestleMania match. Been there since 1999, 25 years. Yep. He paid his dues and he finally won a WrestleMania. He paid his dues up.
He's been around forever. He's quite the talented individual. Like, he's just.
Excuse me?
I said he's been around forever. He's quite the talented individual.
He finally hit some pay dirt now. He paid his dues. 25 years is a lot of years to pay before you win your first WrestleMania. So he paid his dues. I knew him when he was 26 years old. Now he's 52. He's 52 years old, and his time, you know, is coming to an end. So I'm glad he achieved, you know, become part of the elite now. You know, he is part of the elite up there in WWF. I'm happy for him. You know that, you know, one of us made it to the elite. One of us.
Where did you team with him? Was that the APW that you were referring to?
American Pro Wrestling, Chief Jay Eagle, out of Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Okay.
We run shows for the old Channel 40 network. American Pro Wrestling was on every Friday night. Because we're doing TV, our crew, Ron Killens, trained under Manny Fernandez. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to find where he knew we was doing, you know, TV shows. So we come to Spartanburg. I knew when I saw the kid work, this kid is talented. If I form something with this guy, maybe it'll take me to the top. And he was lightning. I mean, the guy was an incredible worker. And people loved him. So I tried to form that tag team, and WWF come calling. He he got the calling. He got to go to the top. I could never make it to that status, I guess. I had just as much talent. I could work. I never hurt anybody. But I could just never get, I could never make it to that 1% of the 1%. That's right. Hard. 1% will make it to the WWF, but it's hard becoming the 1% of the 1%. That's right. The tough part. And then I look at Rock, Dwayne Johnson. He's coming. He's going back. The man's got $1 billion. Why he want to go back to wrestling? So he must enjoy, it's enjoyment of it. There's nothing right. like Rick being in front of 40,000 people, hearing them scream the rush that you get. This is an incredible high.
Professional wrestling is very special in that way, wouldn't you say?
So what now?
Pro wrestling is very special in that way, though, wouldn't you say?
It's of course. Of course it is. Nothing like it.
Yeah. I just want to throw two more names at you, if you could.
Yeah.
Talk about, maybe three. Hold on. Talk about working with Barry Windham.
Barry Windham. He was a good worker. He never hurt. Sometimes you get a little something, but a lot of times you didn't. Yeah. But Barry Windham, it was great working in the ring with Barry Windham. And his brother, Kendall. I got to work with Kendall a lot of house shows. So, Barry Windham was an excellent worker at the time. Who else you want to throw at me?
Larry Zbyszko.
Oh, yeah, Larry Zbyszko. He could work a crowd with the time we worked. Man, people were trying to text me. The time that we worked, he was with Baby Doll. Remember, right. Nikolai? Baby Doll, she was his valet. And he played the crowd more than during the wrestling match. He would actually play the crowd. I'm going to get my charger while I'll be sitting here. Larry Zbyszko really was an incredible worker. I love working Larry Zbyszko. He never hurt you. He'd give you a little something, make you feel good about your job. Instead of just beating the living hell out of you and sending you home. But Larry Zbyszko was an excellent worker. I love working Larry Zbyszko. Working several times. I'm plugging my phone in so it won't go dead on me. Now I'm back at you.
Mike Rotunda.
I got to do my first championship for the belt with Mike Rotunda. And he gave me so much stuff. He walked the ring with Kevin Sullivan and Sid Vicious, the Varsity Club.
Right.
And Mike, everything he done, the match looked like he beat the hell out of me and he wore the hair and everything illegal he could do. But the man was like a night off. He would never hurt you and make you look good. Like I said, so many guys didn't want to be in there, but with Mush, they wanted you to do something. They wanted you to make them look good, but they want to give you a little bit of credibility. Just not beat the heck out of you. Give you a little bit of credibility. Oh, God. I'm trying to get my phone back in my tripod. I might just hold it. Okay. And Mike returned right. to... Good old guy. I like working him. I'd work him any day of the week. It wouldn't bother you at all. I'm glad you brought that name up. That was my first television championship. TV, it was for the belt. And he was giving away $10,000 if you could beat him in 10 minutes or less. So he was talking me up. This would be an excellent young Cougar Jay. You could upset Mike Rotunda. How it would excel his career. So he let me do a lot of stuff. I got to do some arm drags. I got to do a sunset flip. I got to do a cross body tackle and got 3 or 4 near pins. Got a 2 count on Mike Rotunda. I was excited because I never got to cover anybody at that time. So when he was saying, get you a 2 count, I'm like, oh my gosh, he didn't tell me it's time for a 2 count, near pins. Right. My God, he must have done it 4 or 5 times near pins. And he played a crowd. Mike Rotunda, nothing like it. He was a good worker. We were good.
So we're getting ready to wrap it up. So I want to thank you again for coming out here today and joining.
Yeah, and tell people, you know, friend me on Facebook, Dion Moore. You'll see my picture. You know what I look like now. Dion Moore, go to JesusWorldMinistry.com. Get a Courageux shirt.
There you
or
go.
A Courageux card. Make a little donation. I take care of you. I'll send you some stuff. I mail it myself because I don't have anyone else to mail it. So I'll go mail. I package it up myself and I go to the post office and mail it out to you.
And don't forget, go to YouTube, go to WWE Network on Peacock and go check out some Cougar J footage there from back in the day. And you'll have a lot of fun. So thank you very much for making this appearance today.
Well, thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me. I'm just glad that, you know, people remember old Cougar J. You know, I'm more popular now than I was back in the 80s. It's the damnedest thing. I'm more popular now than I was back in the 80s.
Well, I think a lot of people are going back.
I'm an ordained minister now. I preach the gospel. Gospel of Jesus Christ. That's what I do now. You know, hopefully it's going to take me somewhere. If it doesn't, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. That's part of the reason I'm alive. Jesus saved and healed me. So don't forget that. It's never too late. Never too late.
It's never too late. Thank you very much. And don't forget, go to check it out. Go check out his website and get in touch. Go check him out on Facebook.
I'll do it, brother. And I'll post you this whenever you get it ready. Let me know. And I'll pin it at the top of my Facebook page. And they'll see us do our thing.